This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, December 25th. I'm Dave Benninger. Merry Christmas, everybody. Coming up this week, we'll speak with one of our neighbors who's been sharing a gospel message of grace and mercy after a near-death, out-of-body experience 10 years ago today.
This bright curse appeared on my right side. He said to me in my Yupik language that he's the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father, only through him.
We've all seen folks who look like they might need a place to go late of an eve. Dillingham doesn't have a homeless shelter or a detox facility. The responsibility of caring for the homeless and inebriates amongst us falls to the police department.
Our standards in the wintertime as to what qualifies as Title 47 sort of lowers with the temperature. Somebody who we may not pick up in the summertime, we'll pick them up when it's colder just to make sure that they're safe.
DPD Chief Dan Pasquarello joins to discuss Title 47s. We'll check in on that reindeer herd, the one in Port Hyden, not the one that's back in the North Pole today. Plus, Tim Troll revives the Our Story series to reshare one of his favorite tales, which also happens to deal with reindeer. And you know those kind of unique Christmas songs we've been playing a lot of? You know, these guys. Yeah, those guys. Well, our resident metalhead Andrew Slagle tells us a little bit about Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Basically, they're a super group of musicians, very eclectic, from thrash metal bands from California, Broadway musicians. You've got guitarist, ex-guitarist from Megadeth.
Those stories are coming up on this special Christmas edition of Bristol Bay and Beyond. There's a fairly good chance there's a real, or maybe a not real, spruce tree within arm's reach of you right now. And maybe underneath that tree is some shiny, torn wrapping paper. Twinkling lights and ornaments. Reindeer. The NBA. Macy's Parade. That ham in the oven. Amazon Prime. Candy canes. Frosty. Bing Crosby. And movies. Even that one that plays over and again for 24 hours straight.
Ralphie? What would you like for Christmas?
Horrified. I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Ryder Carbon Action 2-inch Owens Ball Air Rifle.
Ooh. No. Shoot your eye out.
Well, there's a lot to Christmas, but this next story has more to do with the original story. You know, the one many of us read last night from the Book of Luke, chapters 1 and 2. This one starts 10 years ago today. Abraham George from Manicotic woke up in a hospital in Anchorage. About a month prior, on November 29, 2005, George was nearly killed in a snow machine accident on a day he'd been drinking heavily and smoking pot. George had been out cutting firewood about 5 miles from town, and on the way back, a ski hooked a tree root, stopping the snow go, but not the fully loaded wood sled behind it. It slammed into George and pinned him to the ground. His two companions unloaded the wood, put him in a sled, and rushed him to the village clinic. George was later medevaced to Anchorage and treated for a broken pelvic bone, broken tailbone, backbone, ribs, and collarbone, and a host of other injuries. To say George had a checkered past up till that day would be putting it mildly. By his own account, he was the town drunk, a heavy pot smoker, a man with a mean streak and a long court record. But while he was unconscious that month, George had a near-death, out-of-body experience, and he encountered God. He left the hospital on his own 2 feet, healed, just 2 days after Christmas. Now a man of fervent faith, George has shared the story of his travels to heaven, hell, and back, and the gospel message to hundreds, if not thousands, of listeners over the past 10 years. Abraham George's life is now the subject of a book that was released this fall. KDLG's Molly Dishner tells us more about the Manicotic Christmas miracle.
Abraham George has vague memories of being flown to Kanakanak Hospital, then transported for a medevac to Anchorage. On board that flight, he says he felt like he fell asleep before he got up from his own body. He watched from above as the EMTs tried to keep him alive, shocking him with defibrillators. He listened to the sound of his heart flatline on the EKG. Standing above his own body, he was suddenly not alone.
And this person, bright person, appeared on my right side. He said to me in my Yupik language that he's the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father, only through him.
George says the man took him to a bright, beautiful place, where he saw families and friends who had already died, and to a much darker one, where he saw people begging to leave.
There's heaven, there's outer darkness, and there's hell. Those places are real. And Jesus told me, tell my children that he's the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father, only through Jesus. Tell my children.
When George woke back up, he believed he had been given a second chance at life so that he could spread the word of Jesus' return to earth. Since then, he has changed his worldly ways. He quit drinking, smoking, and fighting. And he began telling his stories to those who would listen, traveling to churches around the state. It was in Anchorage a few years later that Glenn Herman heard George share about his near-death experience and his travels to heaven, hell, and back.
I had a real skeptical reaction, and based on some of the evidence that he presented, I decided to research, to do an investigation, to see if what he was claiming was true, was actually true.
After about 2 years of traveling the region and interviewing folks who knew George, Herman says he came to believe his story. And then he decided it needed a wider audience, so he decided to write a book about it. Celestial Traveler was published this fall. Manicotic Mayor Melvin Andrew was one of the people Herman interviewed. Andrew and Abraham George have a long history.
Well, Abraham George was town troublemaker, to make it plain and easy to explain. And I was a village public safety officer during that time. And on some occasions, I'd have to arrest him. During those confrontations or contacts that I made with him, we developed an animosity toward each other. But then after his accident, lo and behold, Mr. Abraham George changed.
Now, Andrew agrees with the other men that it's a story that can change lives.
It is a powerful message, and I'm sure it isn't just Manicotic. It's in the region and in the state that people have heard his message and may have changed their lifestyle.
George has gone from being Manicotic's town drunk, a man all but guaranteed to end up behind bars, to a sober but impassioned evangelist and elder in the church.
My mom used to pray for me daily. It's her answered prayer that the Lord would intervene.
He was wheeled into the hospital 10 years ago, body and soul broken, barely clinging to life. Wherever he went while he was unconscious, one thing is for sure. When he walked out of that hospital 2 days after Christmas, Abraham George had been healed in more ways than one. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
Last month, the state released a rather scathing report on the Department of Corrections, and Governor Bill Walker fired the DOC commissioner and hired another. Among the report's many recommendations was one that pertained to Title 47 protective custody, also known as sleep it off or the drunk tank. Think of Mayberry's Otis Campbell in the Andy Griffith Show. Following at least one death and a number of other reported problems, especially overcrowding, the report recommended the state develop appropriate alternatives to locking up inebriates for the night. The problem is, sometimes there are no good alternatives. I asked Dillingham Police Chief Dan Pasquarello to join this week and offer some more perspective.
Title 47, also known as protective custody, is when the police find a person in public who is incapacitated due to their consumption of alcohol to the point where they can't make rational decisions concerning their own health and safety, so the police take them into custody to protect them.
There's no charges filed. They're not in any criminal trouble. This is just somebody who is drunk. It may be cold. They need a place to go. And you basically take them to jail.
That's correct. There are no criminal charges for somebody being brought to sleep off.
How many times do you see this in a year?
It varies from year to year. This year, so far to date, we took 181 people into Title 47 here at DPD.
And that's down a bit from last year?
That's correct. Last year there was 290.
Okay. Any explanation of why the numbers change year to year?
The reasons could be transportation, whether people can get here by snow machine easily, economics, people may or may not make a lot of money, which keep them from coming to town, human factors. Some officers place more people in the sleep off than others. There's varying reasons, but we average probably 230 every year.
What's the average Title 47 experience?
A lot of people that get taken into protective custody get taken in fairly regularly. For whatever reason, they find themselves highly intoxicated in public. They have nowhere to go, no one to care for them. So we take care of them, bring them in. A lot of them are fairly calm and compliant, but there are times when they can be disruptive, both physically and just to the smooth operation of our jail facility.
You also have a limited number of beds in the jail facility. What happens when it gets overcrowded and you have people that need a place to sleep it off?
Sometimes we have to get creative in our use of space. At our facility, we have hard cells where people are serving time. They've already been to court. Then we have a couple of holding cells, which are just essentially empty rooms, and that's where we usually put people we bring into protective custody and also people who've been arrested. And depending on whether we have all males or whether we have a combination of males and females, sometimes we have to get creative where we place people. We've placed people in the day room of the hard cells before just because we have no other option.
They get a meal or a smoke or a cup of coffee in the morning?
We give them coffee in the morning, but we don't have a budget to feed them.
Speaking of budget, it brings to mind that the police department kind of serves as the detox, as the homeless shelter. We don't have those facilities otherwise in town. You remember we used to. How long has it been since there were other places where someone of a cold night had a place to go other than the jail?
Title 47 law says the first place, when you find somebody inebriated in public, the first place you'd bring them is to their home. If somebody is not from Dillingham, we obviously can't bring them to their home. When we get Dillingham people and we try to bring them home, perhaps their family doesn't want them home due to their condition. The second place you would bring people to, according to the law, is a detox facility. Here in Dillingham, we do not have a detox facility. Probably over a decade ago, at Kanackanack Hospital in Jake's Place, there was a facility on the back of the building called Freddy's Social Detox. And it was open for several years, and we were able to bring Title 47s there if option A, bringing them home, didn't work. According to the law, the third place you'd bring a person is to a medical facility, which would be Kanackanack Hospital. If somebody comes into our facility and has a high BAC, over a 0.30, we'll bring them out to the hospital and a doctor will medically screen them to see if it's safe for us to lodge them in our jail. And the fourth place, the last place you're supposed to bring a Title 47 is to a correctional facility, a jail. But as explained here in Dillingham, a lot of the options end up the Dillingham Police Department houses public inebriates in their jail because there's no other options in the community.
So you end up kind of be in the first line of Title 47, but that also puts you and your officers in an interesting position of taking care of people that need it. Is it an annoyance? Is it part of the job that makes you feel good about a day's work?
We kind of makes you feel good when you're taking care of some people. Our standards in the wintertime as to what qualifies as Title 47 sort of lowers with the temperature. If we would not, somebody who we may not pick up in the summertime when it's 60 degrees, we'll pick them up when it's cold or below zero, just to make sure that they're safe.
The little good deeds that go unnoticed because they probably happen at 2 o'clock in the morning when the rest of us are in bed.
That's correct. And also at night sometimes, because there are several people in town, a handful of them that you could classify as homeless. They live in abandoned cars. They couch surf. They live in tents in the summertime wherever they can go. And we kind of know who those people are, and we kind of spread the word to them that if it's cold out and they have no place else to go, they can come sleep in our lobby.
Chief Dan Pasquarello, it's good as always to speak with you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
You're listening to Bristol Band Beyond on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. There's an old adage that says, don't stand in the way of a Bristol Bay teacher and the airport on the first night of winter break. But seriously, our airports are packed this time of the year, as all are. But we have the exception of being a little more weather-dependent and a little more one-airline-dependent. We sent Molly Dishner to Dillingham's airport Tuesday, which was the last day of school, to catch the flavor of the exodus. What we didn't know was that the freezing fog was going to extend her assignment all the way to Wednesday night. She summed it all up with this report.
On the last day of school before winter break, the excitement at Dillingham Middle High School was palpable as students caroled in the halls. That was Cascabelas, the Spanish version of Jingle Bells. By Tuesday night, the mood was a little more somber as folks from throughout Bristol Bay gathered at the Dillingham Airport, waiting for their flights.
My name's Katrina. I teach out of Manicotic. We're headed to Maui. We decided we need some hot and sun and flip-flops.
My name is Kylie Pintandi. I teach in Electinic, and I'm headed to Pennsylvania for the holidays with my dog. Sorry.
Those hopes of getting home or just somewhere hot for the holidays faded away as flights were canceled and delayed.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're on flight 256, it's not canceled yet. It just diverted back to King Salmon, and we should have an update in about 30 minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for Christmas. Thank you.
A few teachers offered up their own ideas of how they could help the plane land.
We can all stand out there with those flares.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all sit on each other's shoulders. We might get high enough.
They'll just pick the top one up and we'll just zoom up.
But those didn't come to fruition, and finally the last flight of the night on Tuesday was canceled, leaving weary travelers looking for a place to lay their heads, be it inn or stable, while they devised new travel plans. Wednesday morning brought more fog and more waiting.
I would like to be home for New Year's.
Aw. See, I'm like, if I don't get out by tomorrow,
I will wait until New Year's. Because I'd rather spend a few days home.
But Dillingham also brought a little bit of cheer to the airport, one traveler says.
I'm Deb Fortner from Manicotic. Okay, so we just wanted to say thank you to all the people who brought food out to the airport today. I know we had pizza and cookies, fresh fruit, and granola bars brought out. So thank you, everybody, for taking care of us at the airport today.
And by late afternoon, planes buzzed over town as the airport filled again with passengers waiting for one of several flights that ferried people out late into the night. Those planes also brought a few people home. And what about those Manicotic teachers hoping for a mele kalikimaka on Maui's sunny shores?
We just landed like not even a half an hour ago. Today, since we're all like major jet lagged, our plan is just to check out the condo and probably get some beach and pool time. It is like 80 degrees and breezy and beautiful, sunny with blue skies. It's amazing.
Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night.
Mele kalikimaka is a wise way
to say Merry Christmas to you.
Well, as far as we know, Big Red won, as NORAD calls Santa Claus, and his 9 reindeer had a successful trip last night and are back home in the North Pole. Reindeer are good for pulling sleighs. They're also good for eating. Our friends down in Port Hyden have been working hard to revive a reindeer herding tradition on the Alaska Peninsula in their effort to bolster food security. The first shipment of reindeer from Stebbins and St. Michael arrived last summer. A bear attack set the herd back by half, and it's been since then that we last checked in. This seemed a good week to get an update. Adrienne Christensen is the Director of Business Development for the Tribal Council in Port Hyden. Adrienne, good to speak with you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Dave.
So bring us up to speed. What's it look like on the ground today?
Well, today we have 14 reindeer. We have a bull that came to us in September. His name is Rico Suave, and we hope that he is living up to his name.
Do you have to play any mood music or anything to encourage the activity?
We've just left them alone and left them to their own devices, and we're hoping that they are successfully integrating with each other and that we'll have calves in the spring.
Now, have any of the reindeer given birth since they've been in Port Hyden?
We've only had them since July, so no, they haven't had a calving season yet, but this spring will be our first.
Okay. Now, remind the listeners who have maybe are new to this story that there were more reindeer that initially came, and there was some predation involved here.
Right. We had a bear attack that took out a big part of our herd, but we do have a strong set of reindeer that are hopefully going to be there reproducing and calving for us.
All right.
In the upcoming month.
And are all these inside of the big pen there that's in the middle of the village?
Yes.
Okay, and are they safer now from bear and wolf attacks?
Yes, we've got people, we've got 2 people actually that are on the reindeer team that are watching them all the time. They're there in the morning and in the night. We've installed an electric fence and hoping that no other bears come out this winter.
At one point, do you let these reindeer out of the pen to graze around the area? And follow on to that would be, at what point do you begin kind of harvesting these for their intended meat purpose?
We bring them out to graze now a little bit. We're still training them, domesticating them, because they came to us from a herd that was on their own. So we bring them out, but bring them back into the pen at night. And once our herd grows to a bigger size, then we'll have to take them out further. And we'll eat some when our herd gets big enough to sustain the loss of a few deer without it actually impacting the long-term plan.
None yet, though, huh?
None yet.
All right. So it's been about a year. Is the village just still kind of excited about this project? I know there's a history of doing it that tradition kind of died out there back, in the 40s or so, but is there still some excitement about moving forward with this? And Facebook tells me you've now got pigs and other animals moving in as well.
Yes, we are all very excited about the farming initiative. We want to be a sustainable village and make sure that if there's an emergency, that we have food for the long term.
Very good. I don't suppose you're dressing any of the reindeer up for the holiday, are you?
Not yet, but keep watch on Facebook.
Oh, so it may happen this week?
It may happen.
Adrienne Christensen, thanks so much for the time, and Merry Christmas to you and yours down there in Port Hyden. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
This week, Tim Troll contacted us to say he wanted to re-record one of his favorite Our Stories, a segment he produced and KDLG aired for several years back in the early 2000s. Of course, was our reply.
Hello. After a long time away, it is time once again for Our Story. Occasional notes from the life, history, and lore of Bristol Bay in southwestern Alaska. Brought to you by the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust. Well, it's the Christmas season, and everybody's thoughts should be turning to reindeer. It's this time of year that I always think about a story that an old reindeer herder told me. I told it on this radio station many years ago, but I'd like to tell it here again. And I'd like to dedicate this to Joe Clark, a deceased elder from Clark's Point, who himself was a reindeer herder and regaled us with stories about reindeer herding in the steam. I call the story One Night at Reindeer Camp. Akatamani, a long time ago, there was an old reindeer herder falling asleep in his tent. Now, he was a good herder, so he was never so much asleep that he didn't know where his reindeer were. His ears were always awake. The only sound in the night was the occasional thud of his reindeer kicking the frozen tundra to break loose the lichen to eat. It was a satisfying sound, a sound that told the old herder that his reindeer were safe and content and would not wander. He didn't need to worry. Now, just as his eyes were closing, he thought he heard some whispering voices outside his tent. He rose from his bedroll and shook off the days of his sleepiness. He listened intently, but did not hear any more voices. He thought he must have been dreaming, because if there was someone outside the tent, the reindeer would snort, and that would give him away. He took a deep breath, folded himself back in his bedroll, and nodded off to sleep. Later, the voices returned, only this time a little bit louder. He awoke once again and listened, but just as before, the voices stopped. Curious, he rolled out of his bedroll and stepped outside the tent to look around. The night was silent, still, and very, very cold. Faint auroras lit the northern sky, and the reindeer were quiet. There was nobody to be seen, and no footprints in the snow, other than his own, to indicate that anyone else had ever been there. He went back inside his tent. Now that he was wide awake, he decided to have some tea and a small snack. He put more wood in his camp stove and set a pot of water on top to boil, put some tea bags in the pot, and mixed in some dried ayuk leaves, or Labrador tea, for flavor. He rummaged through his food box for some potted bread and a piece of old dry fish. It was just then he heard the voices again. He knew they must be real, because he was wide awake. He stood up and reached for his rifle, but before he could grab it, two men came through the door of his tent. The younger of the two was thin and rather scruffy-looking. He wore dark green trousers with a shirt that sparkled like the starlit sky. He stood a foot or so shorter than the older man, who was a bit plump, brightly dressed in red, and smiled through a full beard that was white as new-fallen snow. The older man spoke. "Hello," he said, but the herder couldn't understand him. Then the older man waved his hand in front of his face and spoke again. "Waka." Now the herder could understand him. "Don't be afraid," the older man said. "We are tired from traveling and want to get out of the cold and rest for a little while. We didn't want to disturb you if you were asleep, but when you boil the water for tea and put ayuk in the pot, the aroma was so delightful, we couldn't resist. May we share a cup of tea with you?" The herder nodded and dug two more cups out of his food box and motioned to the men to sit on some grass mats that were laying beside a small table. "Akumulutin," he said. "Sit down." The herder remembered childhood stories told to him by the elders about the little people who lived on the tundra, the Ikchinghuk. He had never seen any. Could these two guests be Ikchinghuk, he thought? They were little, but taller than he imagined the Ikchinghuk to be. They didn't seem dangerous, but he certainly didn't want to spur their anger. According to the old stories, the Ikchinghuk could be very mischievous, especially to people who were not nice to them. He decided he'd better treat these two strangers well, so that they would tell any little people friends they may have that he was a good host. He didn't want the Ikchinghuk to come around and play tricks on him or bother his reindeer. He poured three cups of tea and put some pilot bread and dry fish on the small table between them. "You look very cold," he said to the two visitors. He rummaged through his food box again and brought out a jar with a small amount of cloudy yellow liquid in it. "Have some seal oil with your dry fish. It will warm you for the rest of your journey." Oh, no, 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 the older man said. You don't need to share the last of your seal oil and dry fish with us. The tea and pilot bread are more than enough. Oh, it's nothing, said the herder. I will be returning to my village soon, and I will get some more. Although he knew a jar of seal oil could cost him a reindeer or two in trade with the seal hunters from the coast. The two visitors relished their tea and took great delight dipping dry fish in the seal oil and eating it. Ah, this is such a wonderful treat, the older man said. Seal oil and dry fish go so well together. I can feel it warming my bones already. Little droplets of seal oil were falling into his beard as he spoke. This is just what we need to give us the strength to finish the last part of our journey. And where are you going? Asked the herder. Our village is still some distance from here, the old man said. It lies just beneath the bright star at the end of the Small Dipper. And where are you coming from? Asked the herder. We've been visiting all the villages to the south, delivering gifts to the children who live there. The herder looked puzzled. Why would you be giving gifts to children at this time of year? He asked. Soon the villages will be hosting their winter potlatches, and children will receive many gifts, especially those children who will be dancing for the first time. They'll be receiving the finest of parkas and winter clothes from their parents and their namesakes. Oh, yes, that may be true for the villages that you know, said the old man. We give gifts to all children, especially in those villages that no longer host potlatches. We want them to have something to look forward to during the long, dark winter. Children, no matter where they live, deserve to be happy. And how have you traveled? Asked the herder. You must not be traveling by dog team, for I heard no barking dogs as you arrived, and my reindeer have been quiet. Oh, well, we travel like you. We hitch a sled to a team of reindeer, the old man replied. The three men visited for a while longer and talked about their reindeer. Finally, the older man with the beard finished his tea and soaked up the last drop of seal oil with his dry fish. It is time that we should go, and I'm afraid we have eaten the last of your seal oil. Oh, it is nothing, said the reindeer herder. I was happy to share it with you. The two men rose from the grass mats they were sitting on and left the tent. The herder followed them, but not for long. He stopped in amazement just outside the tent because he could not believe what he was seeing. The two men were traveling in the largest sled he had ever seen. The sled was hitched to 8 reindeer, and they were tiny, much smaller than his own. He could not imagine how those reindeer could pull such a large sled, especially when it was loaded. The men all shook hands, and the two visitors climbed up into the sled. Then the older man picked up the reins and snapped them taut, and bellowed in a loud voice, "Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all." Then the old man in the white beard turned and looked down at the herder, waved, and with a beaming smile, bellowed, "Merry Christmas to you, and to you a very good night." Then, to the herder's amazement, the little reindeer began lifting the sled off the ground. The sled was flying. The herder could only stand motionless as the sled rose and disappeared into the distant northern sky. He watched it until it became no larger in the night than the star that guided it home. After a while, he shook his head. He wasn't sure he understood everything that happened. What is a porch? What is a wall? And what do those words, "Merry Christmas," mean? And the thought came to the herder that he had been experiencing a very real dream. So real, he was even shivering in the cold air. Shaking his head, he went back into his tent, collapsed onto his bedroll, and fell into a deep, deep sleep. In the morning, he awoke, much later than usual. His memory of the night before was still vivid, but he laughed quietly to himself, amused by the strangeness of his imagination. What an odd dream, he thought. Little men in red and green suits, delivering presents to children from a giant sled pulled by tiny flying reindeer. How silly can a dream be? But then as he got up, he noticed on the small table near the stove, 3 empty cups. And beside the cups was a large jar of fresh seal oil and a bundle of dry fish smelling as if it had just come out of the smokehouse. Eli! I can't believe it. Those Ixching Hawks were real. Now, if only I could remember those magic words they said, maybe I could make my reindeer fly. Yes, reindeer were once a very important part of life in Bristol Bay and in all of Southwest Alaska. And who knows, maybe that little Ixching Hawk in the white beard and red suit got his reindeer from somewhere around here. And for our story, I'm Tim Troll, and have a very Merry Christmas.
Finally this week, last Christmas season, we added the Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Christmas Trilogy to our music library in its entirety. TSO's music is a little different than most of the traditional standards. Well, I don't know much about Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and judging by the number of phone calls we've gotten, neither do many of our listeners. So before he left town for the winter break, I invited our resident metalhead Andrew Slagle in to enlighten.
Hello, Dave.
Good to have you in, and Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
All right, tell me what's interesting about these guys.
I just remember as a kid putting it on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve and rocking out and air guitaring, and that's about it, you know. And basically, they're a super group of musicians, very eclectic, from thrash metal bands from California, incredible vocalists from all over the world that come together. We have Broadway musicians. You've got guitarist, ex-guitarist from Megadeth, from Alice Cooper. And it was all kind of tied together by a guy named Paul O'Neill, who was really well-known for managing bands like Aerosmith, Joan Jett, AC/DC, Scorpions, and last but not least, a band called Savatage, who produced these albums that were basically rock operas, which is very close to what Trans-Siberian Orchestra does with their CDs.
Who's the lead singer of that group?
So one of the frequent vocalists you hear for TSO and the main vocalist for Savatage, his name's John Oliva.
Let's take a listen to John Oliva's voice in this song, Christmas Dreams.
Somewhere beyond where the light rarely goes, somewhere beyond where the dark barely breathes, somewhere this night where the dark only knows, she awaits ever patient, she awaits rarely seen, but her moments are taken, for in the dead of the night, gathering light, Christmas dreams.
So that's not exactly your Bing Crosby or your Perry Como there.
No, it's pretty awesome that they're bringing that, you know, the gruff vocals and the styles of heavy metal together with Christmas. And
you saw them this summer.
I did.
Tell me more.
So there's this, it's acclaimed as the greatest heavy metal festival in the world, and it's called Wacken Open Air. It's in northern Germany. And this was a big deal. I was very excited to hear that they were going to go because Savatage hadn't played a show in 13 years. And it said that Savatage and TSO were both playing, but they announced as kind of a surprise when we got there that they were going to be playing at the same time. And they would play a couple Savatage songs and then play you know, six Trans-Siberian Orchestra songs, and it was taking up both stages. Now, this festival has about 90,000 people. Oh. So, it's huge. It's staggering. And I was there with an electrical engineer watching the show, and he was like, how are they powering this? Like, there were so – it was so light. I bet you could have seen it from outer space. There were so many LEDs. There were screens and pyrotechnics and flames going off all over the place, as well as, you know, 30 musicians on stage performing.
So that all sounds to me like kind of keeping in tradition with the great rock opera groups or the heavy metal, you know. But where did it circle into this Christmas theme that even carries a Christian message?
You know, I'm not 100% sure, but they just right off the bat, for some reason, that was their goal. It said that right when they started, they knew they wanted to do a Christmas trilogy. And it's kind of funny because it's like you have all these musicians coming together for one thing from all these different places. It's almost like a metaphor.
Well, we know that not everybody that puts out a Christmas album is of the Christian faith, of course.
And right.
It's a good way to sell.
And often, yeah.
But there's something very unique about the way that they go about it. They're not just retreading some of the old standards, even the hymn standards that pop up on other. And I don't know, but that gives it a more genuine or more unique experience to me.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that they're almost telling the story with the songs, and they're bringing in a bunch of, I mean, hear the word orchestra, they're bringing in a bunch of, you know, the classical influences, and they'll play Canon and D with a Christmas song. It's like, well, that's not something that you normally hear.
That's not the Pachelbel Canon D that every new pianist learns to play exactly, I don't think.
I don't think that's your normal, you know, starting lesson right there. That would be awesome if it was, kicking the distortion right after the first bar, you know. That would be great.
How do you sum up, if somebody asks you, who is this Trans-Siberian Orchestra, what do you tell them?
I'd say it's a super group of talent, good-looking people on stage playing incredible music, and they have a good message. Obviously, they have a Christmas message here, and being a band that's donated over $10 million to charities for, you know, charity shows and whatnot, I'd say they're just an all-around good listen any time of the year.
Well, this may be the last day that we play Trans-Siberian Orchestra on KDLG for another 11 months. Do you have one song off of these three albums we could leave the listeners with?
Yeah. That would be the Christmas Eve Sarajevo version, and that'll kick in with that Carol of the Bells.
And where did that come from, by the way?
That came from one of their first albums, and it's called Dead Winter Dead, and it was about the Bosnian War. So.
All right.
Yes.
Andrew Slagle, it's always good to have you in, and Merry Christmas to you and yours. Thanks so much.
Have a heavy metal Christmas, Dave.
That's it for this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond, the Christmas edition. There's a full moon tonight, the first on Christmas Day since 1977, and it won't happen again until the year 2034. More important in my book is Friday seems such a nice fit for celebrating Christmas, but this won't happen again until 2020. Keep in touch. We like your feedback and story ideas. Dave at KDLG is my email address. I'm Dave Benninger. See you back here next week on January 1, 2016. Bye-bye.